Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey parents, Tim Wright here, along with Dr. Michael Gurian. I'm here in Phoenix, Arizona. Michael is up in Spokane, Washington, and we are a part of the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. And we have another question today that we want to get at that came to us via our Facebook Wonder Parenting group. If you are not a part of that, just go to Facebook, do a quick search of Wonder Parenting, and we will let you in as soon as you hit that join button. And before we dive into the question, want to give a shout out to the Center of Place of Hope, and they are one of our sponsors. Dr. Greg Jantz and his great staff up there provide inspired health care for restoring balance to the body, mind, and spirit. And then to Man Cave, men all need to be caring, actively engaged, vested, and encouraged. And their mission is to improve the well-being of children by increasing the number of children growing up with engaged, committed, and responsible fathers or male role models, both of them doing really exceptional work. And we have been proud to have them as sponsors for many years now. You can learn more about both of them at wonderparenting.com. That's wonderparenting.com, where you will find a link to their organizations. So, Michael, let me read for you the question. It's a bit long, but that's okay. We like them when they've got some good detail for us. Mm-hmm. So here we go. Hi, sorry for the long post. That's all right. I have a 2-year, 11-month-old boy who has always been very attached to me from birth rather than to my husband. My husband does try it with him, but my son prefers me most of the time. But my last month or so, it has gotten really hectic with my son screaming and shouting for me if my husband tries to help him or comfort him. For example, my son will want me to change his nappy, bathe him, play with him, and put him to sleep. If he wakes up at night, I must comfort and lie by him. He will protest and scream for me if I don't. I'm currently 16 weeks pregnant and really trying to get into a routine where my husband takes more responsibility with our son. So when the new baby arrives, it won't be such an adjustment for him and I will have to spend time with the baby. To add to this, we did move to a new country 5 months ago where we are living with my family-in-law. My son had to start a new daycare, and his routine changed quite a bit. I expected to see some regression and for my son to have some challenges with all this change, but he was really doing well until about a month ago. I have my family-in-law saying I'm spoiling my son when I do comfort him or when I attend to him when he is screaming and shouting for me or he is naughty and needs a spanking. I always wanted a secure attachment with my son, as I didn't have that when I was growing up. But I'm wondering now if I have done more damage than good with my son, and now it has become more separation anxiety than attachment. Wow, this is a great question. There's a lot of stuff there for parents, I think, many of whom have probably had similar experiences. All right, Michael, initial thoughts.
Yeah, this is a really interesting case in the sense that everything that's happening is potentially within the range of normal for the circumstances here.
Yes.
Right. And at the same time, I'm just so curious about what happened a month ago. And yeah, we don't know that. It could be cumulative. They moved 5 months ago. Now that is a stress and a trauma, mm-hmm, on the child and on the whole family system. It absolutely is. it was, I'm sure, necessary, but it, you know, it is. And we moved when I was a kid, we moved about every year or two. It was definitely stress and trauma, right? So 5 months ago, and before that, and a little after that, he has the stress and the trauma, but, and that's some of what's creating his separation anxiety. It's some of what's creating his intense attachment to mom, and she's his total secure object, right? Because he's under stress. But it seems like something happened a month ago, unless this is all cumulative, something happened. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what that is. And it's a very curious case to me. Let's treat it, though, as cumulative, right? Okay. That there was a stress and there was, and they're making the move. And now he's started a new daycare. And now there's this accumulated stress trauma. And so he's just cleaving to mom, and that's it. Okay. So the situation that they ultimately are going to face, because she's 16 weeks pregnant, especially, is that they do have to wean this child from this complete and utter attachment to the mom. They don't want to wean him of attachment. We want to remember this. A child can never be too attached at this age. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can make the argument. I absolutely would make the argument that with a 15-year-old, it's going to be different. You know, we're going to be saying, hey, you need to go be more independent. But at 2 to 3 years old, we shouldn't think we're harming a child by being attached to the child. Attachment's a really good thing. At the same time, we want the dad to be more attached to the child. And the mom's instinct is right. That's really right. And then the in-laws, these folks, we want them to be more attached to the child. And the circumstance of her being 16 weeks pregnant is going to force this. And they're going to have to live through, I hate to say it, but this family's going to have to live through a lot of screaming from this child. And they want to do this slowly and carefully and not like, you know, don't harm the child, but pick some things, like pick the overnights or during the night. That's what I thought of as I was listening to you read it. And of course, I read these ahead of time and study them. And I thought, where would they start? You know, maybe they could start there. Maybe that's number one. And we try that for a month. Where no, she doesn't go in there. And if not that one, by the way, pick another one. My ultimate message is, I don't know this family. You know, I'm not sure this is the one, but pick something and start with something. And in that ritual, that will get ritualized, and then the mom will not come. So I'm going to stay with this one as if they're going to pick this one. So the child cries and mom doesn't come. This time dad comes. The child is still angry, et cetera, et cetera. Dad tries his best. The child is angry, and, you know, then dad leaves, and the child ultimately will fall back to sleep. Maybe start with that one. Or if that seems too traumatic, pick another one, like the changing of the nappies, which of course means they're British. We love it. Yeah, I'm assuming they're British because the nappies. Yeah. I love that. Thanks so much for writing. You know, so do the changing of the nappies, pick that one and start with that one. And then 2 weeks from now, pick another one. So just pick one at a time, do them for a few weeks, do that one for a few weeks, and then do another one and do another one. And then, so by the time that she gives birth, you know, by then we should see the attachment to these other people. The attachment to the mom is still going to be there. Absolute. But we should see a little more attachment to these other people, which is going to help with the separation anxiety, which clearly this child has, definitely. And that can be normal, but it's exacerbated by the fact that they moved and all the routines changed, everything changed. Mm-hmm. Now they're living with these other people, right? And these other people, who knows the relationship that the child has with these other people? The child might have a good relationship with them, might not have a good relationship with them. We don't know. So all of that is change. All of that is adjustment. And so I guess I would create a plan. That's my suggestion, is create a plan and pick one thing at a time. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, add another one and add another one until a number of these things the dad is doing or a grandparent is doing. And then reassess by the time the child, you know, the mom gives birth. I think this will improve by then. But if it hasn't, then the birth will absolutely force the adjustment.
Yeah,
in the firstborn, because the mom simply won't be able to, and the child will have to adjust to dad and others taking more care.
We chatted about this a little bit last week with the 5-year-old who was not sharing with his brother, taking things from his brother. And one of the things that you said was important was to be spending some special time with this 5-year-old. Wondering if the same holds true in terms of dad, not just ritualizing like the changing of the nappy, bedtime stuff, but are there ways that even with a 3-year-old that dad can begin to say, hey, son, let's go out and we're going to go do something special. And they begin to bond that way.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. We shouldn't just pick these times when the child's under distress for the dad to bond with the child, but all the way through. Yeah. And I always kind of, the two areas of suggestion I always make is just go do things anyway, you know, fun things. And then the other is do things with the child that are in his area of interest. And so if he's showing interest in anything, let's say, he's only 3, so he may not be, but if he is, then definitely go spend time with him away from mom. You know, spend time with him, attached, bonded with him, doing the stuff he already enjoys. And then meanwhile, if that isn't showing, then just go do things with him and do things with him that are not here at the house. Right. So take him to the park. If he's riding a bike yet, go bike riding with him. Be unusual, but maybe with training wheels. So, you know, whatever it is, and not where mom is around. And because that's going to help increase the attachment to dad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So as you were saying that, I had a thought then too. Yes, that dad and son need their own time, their bonding time. At what point might you do, say you play a little game, dad and the son are on the floor and they're playing with toys and mom is sitting on the couch watching, but she's not engaged, but mom is there and the son is sort of learning that even when mom's in the room, I can still have relationship with dad.
Yeah, sweet. That sounds great too. Yeah, absolutely.
But it sounds like dad may need to do a little work first before that happens, because I would imagine the son's just going to pop right up and go to mom early on in this.
Well, yeah, that's why I sort of suggest that the dad and the son go away and mom's not around. But I like what you're saying, to try it out and to see if the son will focus on dad and focus on whatever is the fun task they're doing and not look back at mom.
Yeah.
You know, I'm suspecting that what this kid is doing because of the stress and trauma, right, of the move and et cetera, that he just keeps looking back at mom, that she's his secure object. And she's so acutely his secure object that he gets scared when he's not near her. And we have to gradually get him out of that.
Right.
And the reason it's good to start doing it gradually is because I did mention before, it will be forced when she has this child. And there are two potential disadvantages to it being forced then and we're not doing it beforehand. One is that he could be, very hard on his mom and she's got to focus on this child. She's still going to give love to the firstborn, but you know, all her biology, et cetera, she's going to have to focus on this 1-week old infant. Right. So he could do harm, and we don't want him doing harm from his jealousy and all that. We don't want him doing harm. So he could do harm to the child or to the mom. Those are the two things to watch for. So if we can get him, and he wouldn't be malicious or anything, it would just be that he's so attached to her and he gets so jealous and mad that he accidentally hits her or accidentally hits the child, you know? And so we want to kind of get him bonding with the other folks first so that doesn't happen. And there will still be stress. There will still be trouble. Like our thing last week, you know, that 5-year-old is still hassling the 2-year-old, right?
Right.
I mean, there's going to be sibling rivalry. What we're trying to deal with is this insecurity and this stress and trauma response the kid is having now that makes mom such an acute, secure attachment object. That we have a few weeks, a few months to pull more toward dad. And if the child just keeps looking at mom, if the threesome is there, then I would say, okay, take him away. You know, got to get him used to being attached to other people without mom around.
Right. You're listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. When we come back, I'm going to ask Michael how mom handles this emotionally. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
All right, Michael, so you've got mom here. She knows, you can tell from this great piece that she's written to us, she knows that she's got to detach a bit from her son, but that can't be easy for her. So talk a little bit about mom. What some things she's going to need to do mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, to still feel engaged with her son and yet begin to allow him the space that he needs to bond with other people.
Okay. So one of the first I want to say, this is, you know, could be one of the most difficult things she goes through in her life, or at least in this 5-year period of her life, let's say, because, and I want to really acknowledge that and just sort of beforehand say how brave and beautiful she is to go through this, you know, and I want to honor her because it's all there's so much of her internal neurobiology is saying attach, attach, attach.
Yes.
Right. And especially because the signals she's getting from the child are attach, 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 and bond, 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 you know, and so she's going to have to, for the functionality of the family and for the building of the self of this child too, she's going to have to reframe, right? And have to reframe her life to some extent and say, okay, wait a minute. I'm going to stay very attached to my child. And our family has to be framed now. Our family has to be in the frame. What is best for this family? That has to be in my framing. And also, what is best for my son? That has to be in the framing. So now she's going to start to walk this line where she's going to think she's making errors. And because every parent thinks they're making errors, and she will think she is making errors. So every time she walks this line where she goes, okay, my child is crying for me as I put him in the car with his dad to go on their expedition. The child is crying for me. It is a mistake that I let him get in that car with dad. But I would say to her, that's not a mistake. It's not an error. You're going to think you're making an error, but that's not an error because you've reframed and you understand that for the sake of the family and for the self-development of the child, for the child's resilience, for the child's ability to be independent, and for the child's ability to bond with dad, which is going to sustain him through life. He needs that bond. Mm-hmm. I've reframed it and I understand that's okay. And so, you know, I'll kind of fight my urge to grab him back and take him back in the house, you know, and I'll do that one step at a time, like one event at a time, so that mom doesn't, you know, lie at night in her bed thinking, okay, tomorrow there's going to be 10 things I'm going to have to do. You know, I can't do them. Just think one at a time. He gets in the car with dad. He cries. I wave at him. Dad drives off with him in the car. And okay, because 5 minutes later, 7 minutes later, 10 minutes later, you know, the dad is going to be stimulating this child and they're going to go do something. And the child isn't going to cry, you know, for 3 hours straight. He's not. He's going to gradually acclimate to this. And, so she's going to go through one of the hardest things she'll ever go through. And yet she has to go through it. She has to be beautiful and brave here and go through this, without giving up attachment,
right?
But in specific situations, facilitating the child's attachment with others. And if she can think about it that way, then she can hopefully think, I'm not actually robbing my child. You know, my child is attaching to these others, just like the child must be somewhat attached to people at daycare, you know, because she didn't say in her note that the child is sent home from daycare all the time, right? So the child is able to go elsewhere, attached to others. And now the mom just has to be training the dad and the child and herself to let that go. And so she only picks 2 or 3 things a day. I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then she just has to process the feelings of that. And it's so helpful for moms in a situation like this to get support from others. And of course, she may well be alone in this new place. And we don't know that, but she moved to a different country, right? A new country. And so she may not have the friendship base to help her. She may not have the four or five other moms who have gone through this around her that she can talk to, that can mentor her, that can be her sisters in this. So she may well have to reach out, like through the daycare, make friends with other moms. What happened for you? How did this work for you? You know, because she needs a little sisterhood here to support her.
Yeah.
She really does.
Yeah. So let's talk about the dad.
Okay.
I could imagine if it were me, or is it if it were I, whatever my grammar is, I would be a little hurt that my son doesn't want to bond with me, maybe frustrated, challenged that every time I want to spend time with him, he's screaming for his mom. How does dad work through some of that stuff is my first question. And my second question, if you forget, I'll come back to it. Mm-hmm. How does dad bond with his son in such a way that after a while it's not, hey, I go do fun stuff with dad, but then when I get home, I'm still running to mom. So let's start with the first one. How does dad sort of work through what must be a bit of frustration for him that his son just seems to be rejecting him for mom?
Right. I hope the way it is very hard. I mean, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I had two daughters. My daughters were so bonded to their mom, especially in the early years. And I was like, I mean, I changed their diapers. I did things. I was a typical modern dad, you know, so I was definitely a dad of the baby boomer generation. But I could tell they were just more bonded to their mm-hmm. mom. And there were times it hurt me. And I would go to my men's group. I've had the same guys. We've been friends, you know, for 35 years. And I would go to my men's group and go, like, did this happen to you? You know, to get the support. And they'd go, oh, yeah, this happened to me, you know, and then getting that support really helped. And this dad, so he's in a new country, maybe. I mean, we don't know the constellation of this, but he's got to reach out to some friends, too. He has to have a brotherhood helping him because this is not unusual. And there's going to be a lot of other men out there who are going to go, it happened to me. And then they're going to give strategies. And then they're going to, you know, kind of probably tell this dad sort of what we're doing here, which is do things with this mm-hmm. boy, bond by doing, you know, because ultimately he's going to get stimulated by the doing and he's going to bond you through the doing with you through the doing. But yes, also keep changing his diaper, keep doing the things, you know, cuddling with him, carrying him on your back, lifting him up, throwing him up in the air and lifting him, you know, all those things that dads do those things to bond with him. And he will bond with the dad. And that's one of the messages we have to give young dads in this situation. A year or two from now, he will bond with you. And guess what? When that other child is born, you know, that second child, that dad is going to find that, especially if we lay this foundation, that boy, this firstborn, is going to be really bonded to him.
Yeah.
Because the firstborn is going to hit a bit of a wall with the mom. Not that she's not attached to him, but he's going to see very clearly that the mom is very busy. And so the bond with the dad is going to increase. And so we're setting all that up. So he should get support, keep doing all of the good stuff that helps mom. Because all those good things like changing diapers, all that is good dad work too. And helps the nitty gritty stuff helps with the bonding. And then put all this in place and get ready for a year or two from now when this is going to probably switch or it'll switch at 10. We never know when it'll switch, but it always switches that suddenly now the boy is more bonded with dad than mom. And then mom's going, what? What happened? You know, and then mom's the one saying, so just know this is the cycle. This is the cycle. Yep.
And we have done a podcast on that. I think it was called Why Does My Son Hate Me?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so it does happen. We're going to be back. I've got one more thing to chat with Michael about here, about parenting, and especially in this particular situation. You're listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. We will be back with you in just a moment. So, Michael, I want to pick up on something here that, and I don't want to pile on the in-laws here. I just want to use them as an example of how challenging it can be sometimes for parents when especially the in-laws, out of the goodness of their hearts, start giving parenting advice.
Yeah.
And the dilemma Now they're living here with their in-laws, but the dilemma that can come with the in-laws giving some parenting advice that may be hurtful in this case for the mom, and the son now, the dad now finds himself in between, right? Stuck.
Yep.
In between the in-laws and his wife. This is a very typical situation.
Yep.
And I'll talk as an in-law who's got, both of my kids have kids. Jan and I certainly behind their backs talk about things that we would do differently if we were their parents, because we're so much smarter. But we really don't, unless our kids ask, we really don't butt into how they parent their kids, because that's really not, we don't want to put our kids in that position. And so that just seems like wise advice to us, but that doesn't always happen, right? Especially when you're living in close quarters. So how do you, let's speak not to the in-laws, but let's speak to the mom and the dad here. How do they navigate that and keep their marriage sane?
Yeah, I it's even possible something related to what you just said is happened a month ago. You know, it could be that there's like a stressor that occurred in a battle between the father, since she's living with her in-laws, it's the father's parents. So his parents, him, her, could be, because it is so stressful. Mm-hmm. And the in-laws have to, they have a right to say, to give some wisdom and to say, you know, I think they shouldn't say I'm spoiling. I mean, that they shouldn't be labeling or anything like that, but they can make suggestions. Mm-hmm. They could say, and sympathetically and empathically, like, oh man, this is so stressful for you that this is going on. And this happened like with my son or my daughter or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, empathizing. And can I, or can we take him? Let's say his name is Joe. Can we take Joe out to give you some, you know, to cut out some stress for you, or to give you some time off, or, you know, can we do that? So approaching it that way would, in a way, it would help a lot better than saying you're spoiling your kid.
Yep.
They clearly don't, you know, they don't understand attachment, right? And on the other hand, they also understand that something's got to change.
Yes.
So the way they're approaching it is, you're spoiling your kid. Mm-hmm. This is a better way to approach it. It creates less conflict. It helps the mom out. It empathizes with her. It doesn't put the dad in the middle, you know, to your point. And it's just better. And if in-laws would do that, I think things would go better. I you know, I cannot applaud them. I don't think they should be saying things like you're spoiling or anything right. like that. So then for the husband and wife themselves, you know, the dad, part of what the dad has to do is say to his parents, you just cannot talk to my wife that way.
Yes.
You know, this is my wife. You need to respect her. You can't be labeling her and attacking her. If in fact they did. Now, if she's paraphrasing, if they never said spoiled, then okay, I'm sorry, mea culpa. But she did say this, so I'm assuming that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So he needs to make sure, and yes, he's in the middle there, but that's part of his job, you know. That's part of his job. He's got to protect his wife, and mm-hmm. he's got to protect his family. And if he sees that his in-laws are being are labeling or being mean in some way, he has to protect. So my hope would be that they would hear this podcast and they would all go, okay, we get what's going on here. And all of us has to shift our role a little bit in order to accommodate, because no one is actually doing anything wrong in this situation. The right. mom's not doing anything wrong. You know, the dad's not doing anything wrong. And even though perhaps the in-laws said that they were spoiled, the in-laws also mean well. So everyone means well.
That's
and
right.
they just have to say it differently and volunteer to help rather than judging.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in this particular case, it's close quarters. You know, even if they live in a mansion, it's still close quarters for everybody to be living together. And they're all living under the stress of a new move, these anxieties that their grandson, their son is going through. So those are close quarters. But to your point, and I, as a pastor, I've seen this enough where in this case, the son didn't take the side of the wife. And that really causes some issues. And even if he agrees with his parents, you don't say that out loud. You always, you know, side with your spouse, and you're right to just be able to go to parents. Look, I know you're trying to help. The best way you can help right now is to not necessarily give parenting advice, but just say, how can I help you? How can we help you? Because everybody's frustrated in this situation. Everybody thinks they have an answer, but this isn't a science. This is an art, and every child is different and trying to learn how to do this. And you've given some really helpful advice here on this, but this is, it can really be challenging. It's challenging enough for the husband and wife to go through it. And then to add in some other voices that have your best in mind, but maybe don't always say it well, just makes it even more challenging and more frustrating for everybody.
Yeah, it really does. It's some of the hardest stuff that this family will go through.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's say that nothing, you know, tragic happens. This is some of the hardest stuff they'll go through because everyone is, as you said, they're in close quarters. And every time the child cries and carries on, the anxiety level of everyone in the family goes up, as you have pointed out. The mom's anxiety goes up, the dad's anxiety, and then the in-law's anxiety. And the in-laws probably have a lot more anxiety about this than the kids even realize, right? Than their daughter-in-law and son. Because it's so loud. Like, their house has been taken over now, right? They were living themselves. Now suddenly, okay, they've got, and they invited them in, let's say, but they've got these two other adults living in the house, and then this child and another on the way. So their whole lives have been upset. And everybody's life's been upset by this, even though it sounds like it was the right thing to do, but everyone's life has been upset. So we got to have sympathy for everyone's anxiety level, and everyone has to be an adult here and say, okay, my anxiety level's up, so is theirs. Let's count to 10 before we say anything, right? Let's really protect all the primary relationships. Like you, I mean, as a therapist, I have seen so many cases, and I wrote a whole book called Mothers, Sons, and Lovers about this, and which was renamed Invisible Presence in a later edition, which is about the boy's relationship with his mother. Well, now the man's relationship with his mother and his relationship with his wife and the triangle between his wife and his mother and himself. And that was a long book. I mean, there's a lot about that.
Yeah.
If anyone is interested in this, it's called The Invisible Presence. And it goes deeply into this, and it can ruin marriages. Like, if the son doesn't find his way through here, if we don't know this family, but if needed, if he needs to be the brave one and say, look, you can't talk to my wife this way, the dividends to that are huge.
Yes.
But if he doesn't do it, and this goes on for a few years, they could end up divorced.
Yep.
I mean, that's how powerful and primal this stuff is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. And it's just a situation where everybody needs a lot of grace, right? Everybody wants the same thing. They want this child to grow up to be healthy. They want the birth of the second child to be really good and ease in. But right now, there's a lot of stressors in that family. And our hope is we've given you a few words of hope and encouragement as you make your way through it. We appreciate the question. This question, by the way, just to remind you, was posted on our Facebook page. All you need to do is go to Facebook, do a quick search of Wonder Parenting, hit the join button, and we'll let you in. Otherwise, you can go to wonderparenting.com, and you'll find a lot of different resources there, written by Michael, written by me, that can be helpful in your parenting adventure. We will be back with you next time. We're going to talk about trauma. We've covered this topic before, but it's one that comes up again and again, and it's such an important one. And Michael, of course, has his own experience with trauma in his life. So we'll be talking about that next week. The Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. Thank you, Michael.
Hey, thanks, Tim.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.